Cap Figure Podcast, episode 17. Before we get to this year's World Series, which we will, I found these amazing clips of Mike Francesa discussing the fact that the Mets have no interest in Jose Reyes, who, of course, the Mets did go on to sign and put at third base. Listen to the God be wrong.
But they're not interested in Reyes, but they have kicked the tires on the Cuban player. Okay. And before I get any calls on it, the Yankees and Mets have no interest, I'm told, in Reyes. It looks like neither team has any interest in Reyes.
The Mets need to be scouring the major league rosters and seeing where they can get their hands on someone. And don't call me with Jose Reyes, because the Mets are not going to be interested in Jose Reyes. Don't call me with Jose playing third base, because the Mets are not going to be interested in Jose Reyes. It's going to be somebody else.
Okay, so Cap Figure Podcast, the Cuban, the Jew, the Cuban. This is how Mike Francesa categorizes players.
Kicking the tires on the Cuban player.
Yeah,
huh?
Before you call me with Jose Reyes at third base, I just want to call a player the Cuban. Don't call me about the blacks or the whites. Like, that is so funny. He was talking about Yasiel Puig, for those of you who don't know, and that is our God, Mike Francesa, talking about the Mets before they got Reyes, which they ended up getting. He was so sure of himself, like, don't call me with this, they're not interested, da-da-da-da-da. And it's great that he was wrong, even if he never admits it. Hi, Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Ryan DiPaolo.
It's the middle of the World Series. It's before Game 6, it's after Game 5. The Indians are up 3-2.
Going back to Progressive Field tonight.
But Mike Francesa clips never get old. Oh, also, real quick, I didn't tell you this before I started to get into it. Yeah, they were calling. I don't know what prompted the conversation, but maybe some of the calls Lester got with backdoor cutters, or like one in particular. But the robot umps came up, and Mike Francesa was like, obviously took the old man side of the argument, as expected. Like, human error is part of the game. I just don't want to take humans out of it. And then he goes, look, artificial intelligence, I'm afraid of what artificial intelligence is going to do to us one day. Don't even get me started. I could go on forever. It was so funny. Like, I wonder what Mike pictures in his head when he fears AI. I bet you he pictures, like, iRobot with Will Smith, or that movie with the sexual robot.
I think he has very little to be worried about himself personally.
He pictures Mickey Mantle, like, getting called out looking with like in a ball, like, that's at his head.
I think that, you know, people who really side on the side of, like, no robot umpires, that is just because they're either uninformed or just, like, are trying to be a troll. Because when you actually, like, dig into, like, what they would do with the robot umpires, no one would lose their job. It would probably make the umpire's job easier to pay attention to things like foul balls or balls in the dirt or catcher's interference.
The human element is the stupidest argument. Like, we'll get to the World Series, but now that we're talking about that. They'd be working together. Not one caller said, hey, Mike, how about you have an ump and he gets to see the pitch tracks thing that's on TV? How about just that? How about this is your robot ump? They get to see the pitch tracks thing that we all see at home, and they can override it anytime they want.
Yeah.
But they get to just see it as a guideline.
At least they get to see it.
That's not a robot ump. That's just like, oh, maybe I'm wrong and didn't see this ball, and I could yield to this thing. So anyway, but it is funny. They were talking about the pitch tracks, and we've talked about this, but it's like it's an arbitrary – there's no real strike zone. And Mike Francesa was saying, well, you know, every player I've ever talked to says – they don't mind a guy's zone being different. Just be consistent. And it's like that's not consistent if every guy's thing is different. Plus, they can't call it consistent. They're calling different spots.
Yeah.
But so, bro, the Indians are winning 3-2.
Yes, sir.
You said the Indians you think would win in 7. Before last series, you said you picture a Bartman coming for the Cubs, or like I know you've been taking some gypsy classes and that you believe in the black cat stuff. But I mean, is this what you expected or not? Like, what? Why are the Indians up?
Well, I would say that after the series was tied 1-1, I was scared because the key, you know, variable was Trevor Bauer.
Scared that the Cubs were going to run away with it?
Yeah, because, you know, winning the second game on the road in a 2-3-2 scenario.
Right, and you come home for three, yeah.
And then, you know, game three, you have Kyle Hendricks pitching against Tomlin, and that's probably the biggest discrepancy in terms of, like, the two starters. But if you just look at the narrative, like, it's what we've kept talking about. Obviously, the bullpen, Tito Francona is leveraging those three arms he has in the bullpen, including the best reliever in the game right now, Andrew Miller. He's utilizing that to the maximum extent he can. But then, you know, as we were just talking about, Corey Kluber has pitched in game 1 and 4, and he has pitched close to 14 innings and has given up no runs.
Right.
So
yeah,
when you add those two up, that's two definite wins, and then they happen to win one of those other, like, games that they probably shouldn't have.
Right. And so now, like the chalk is that the Cubs win tonight with Arrieta pitching against Tomlin, and then Kluber pitches again against who pitches game 7 for the Cubs?
Kyle Hendricks.
But, you know, like, this was the one spot, like, their ace. Like, we went through the series before the series and discussed, like, which team has the advantage at each spot. And besides shortstop, maybe second base and, like, DH or whatever, which doesn't really count now that Schwarber's back. But anyway, besides second and short, the ace was the other spot that I like the Indians better, even though on the rotation, obviously I'd rather have Arrieta, Lester, and Hendricks over the Indians. But Kluber's been so good. Like, it's like, and all you need, like, in terms of pitchers, even though they didn't go head-to-head both times they pitched, Lester and Kluber, because Kluber pitched 1-4, Lester pitched 1-5, it's still all you need is to be better than your counterpart if you're talking about pitching to some extent, right? It's like you don't need – like it doesn't matter. Okay, so say I say my ace is a 10 and your ace is a 9,
yeah.
And then my number 2 is a 2 and your number 2 is a 10 is a 8, right?
Yep.
That's still 1-1. It doesn't matter that your second and third, like, your second is so much better than my second.
Right.
All that matters is that you're better than them. Like, and this is a very, 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 very simple version of it, but you get what I'm saying.
Yep.
It's like all you need to do is be better. And so having the edge, like Kluber, how well he's played, yeah, it is the difference. I mean, if he wins game 7, three starts that he won, he's the MVP, just like Mad Bum against the Royals or just like, you know, any great pitching performance. But like, part of it, like, the Cubs not hitting, you know, I mean, what is it, more just the Indians pitching well or the Cubs not hitting, like?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a combination of both. I think the Indians have a very good game plan against the Cubs, and they can exploit the fact that the Cubs are not really great at hitting breaking balls, and that can be kind of overstated to a certain extent. But like in this series, for example, like Miller is throwing his slider, I think it was close to 75% of the time, which he's normally more like a 55-45 split, but it just shows like some of these Cubs hitters like Javier Baez, Jorge Soler, they just really are much better hitters against fastballs. And so I think Cleveland coming in and being able to execute that game plan has helped as well and has neutralized certain hitters to an extent. I think that you've just seen over, you know, the playoffs as a whole, there have been times when Addison Russell and Anthony Rizzo were ice cold in the NLCS and the ALDS. And now, you know, Rizzo has kind of turned it around. Baez has cooled off. Chris Bryant is the one absolute superstar that has just been on the whole time. But, you know, there's just inconsistent play from different parts of the lineup. Like,
well,
Jason
in the
Hayward,
early part of this series, Bryant wasn't on. But you know, he he's playing well. He had the two throwing errors, you know, like, I mean, he gave up the lead. Let's just go through quickly game by game because, we, you know, we last episode we did was before the series even started. So game one, I'll just, like, to give a little summary. But game one, the Indians won 6-0. Kluber started and Lester started. Lester gave up 3 earned runs in 5 2/3 innings. And the Cleveland, you know, Lindor, who's been, the best position player for the Indians, had 3 hits. And, you know, he's just continuing to kill it. So they win game one, ace versus ace. Then game two, in Cleveland again, the Cubs won. Arrieta pitched. He only went 5 2/3. And Bauer could only pitch 3 innings. And so they beat up on Bauer a little. I mean, he only gave up 2 runs, but he had given up 6 hits and 2 walks in 3 2/3. And so Terry went to the bullpen. And then game three, you go back. So, like, at this point, you just referenced, you're the Cubs, you split 1-1. And like, Ryan now, and even myself as a kid, I used to think I'd rather be the team with 3 home games in the middle of a series. Obviously, I don't believe that anymore. But my thinking was, oh, you go 1-1, and then you go home, and you're a good team. You could just sweep. I mean, that's silly. It's easier said than done. But anyway, going back 1-1, I was like, uh-oh, now the Cubs are just going to win the series. Yeah, and then I mean, and then this 1-0 game happens where like, it's a bullpen game. The Indian starter only goes 4 2/3 innings, and then they get an inning in and out from Andrew Miller, and then Sean Allen, the three of them, close out the rest of the game.
Yep, I mean, that game was definitely the turning point, a 1-0 game. And going back to the point, you know, the Cubs came in 1-1, but if you looked at the odds for the games, in Game 3 and Game 5, both games the Cubs were favored by -209 and -210 accordingly. And for those of you who don't know, in betting terms, that's like a very substantial favorite. That's something right. Like the Cubs are expected to win, I think, like 75% of the time, which is outrageous for baseball between two teams in the World Series.
Right, that's a big line. Do you have every game's line there?
Yep.
What was game...
I don't have 1 and 2.
Oh. So then what was when Kluber pitched? What was game 4? What was the line?
Kluber against Lackey, the Cubs were still favored -120.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I mean, the Cubs were favored in all 3 of those games. Like we said, that key game was the 1-0 win for the Indians in game 3, and
right, -120 is just like a barely they're favored, but like, you know, you're right. If you looked at it before the series, like, okay, you have a chance, you can win these Kluber game. This is like you're planning this silly rhetorical theoretical route for the Indians to win the series. It's like, oh, win the Kluber games and then steal one other with your awesome bullpen.
Yep.
And they did. But the game 3 to win 1-0 is like pretty backbreaking if you're the Cubs. I mean,
and I think, you know, the one really crucial decision that Francona made in that game was, I believe, that there was 1 out and a runner on 3rd base, and Andrew Miller had only pitched, I think it was like 1 1/3, and he definitely could have stayed in, but Francona pinch hit for him so that Coco Crisp could come to the plate. They drove that run in, and that's the 1-0 win. I mean, that's
like, that is amazing. That's just like, part of that is just baseball gods, and part of that is,
that's a tough decision.
Oh my god, yeah.
Even if you have a runner at 3rd with 1 out, that's a tough decision for one batter. Really, you're having, you know, it's either you're gonna get a ground ball and you're gonna score a run, not hit into a double play, or you hit a ball deep enough into the outfield for a sacrifice fly. That's not like by any means a lock. So taking Miller out, you know, that is like, there's definitely two sides to that argument, and it worked out for the Indians.
Yeah, no, in a tie game, I don't do that. Like, personally, like, in a tie game, I don't think I would have the balls to do that. I would want to pitch Miller another inning. Like, I mean, especially since they had the off day in between. Like, this is game 3, their first game in Chicago. But that's why I'm not a manager, I guess, is because, like, I don't know how much more valuable the at-bat is. I guess you could also argue it's like, okay, we've only had so many men on base, even though they did get 6 hits off Hendricks, and they had enough men on base. But, like, okay, we only have a certain number of, like, scoring opportunities. I guess we need to capitalize on it. You know, it was the seventh inning when they did that. Or he's just lucky enough that Shaw and Allen are pitching well enough that he can trust them also. It's not. It's much different.
Yeah.
They were talking about just now with Joe Maddon, and it's different because they had a lead. But, like, letting Aroldis Chapman bat in Game 5 in the eighth inning with a one-run lead instead of trying to add on a run with men on base.
Yeah, the difference is the lead there.
The difference is the lead. So like, if Terry Francona is down there, obviously I'm always doing that. But to do it tied takes balls. So then the Indians, then Kluber. And again, like you said, they weren't favored in the Kluber game. They were still underdogs because they're on the road to a better team. And they win 7-2, and one of the Cubs' runs was in garbage time. So, I mean, Lackey, they're getting to their bullpen too, like the Indians, like what's his name
is Montgomery, Justin Grimm.
Joe Maddon is trying to do partially in a way. He like seems like he wishes he could do what Terry Francona is doing, and he's trying to do the sabermetric thing, which is like only letting your pitchers go twice through the lineup because like statistically you do worse the third time. But then, the Indians are hitting Grimm and Montgomery, you know.
Smashing.
Yeah, smashing, I should say.
Justin Grimm.
His ERA is 18. Or no, it's 12 in the postseason.
Well, he served up that three-run home run to Kipnis. I feel you on that one. And it's – part of it is, like, that discussion, like, we're coming in, we're like, okay, Kluber is – better than the Cubs ace, which was Lester, but not by much.
Right.
But then the rest of the staff, like, are you kidding me? The Cubs are so much better and so much deeper. Having Arrieta number two and then Hendricks, those guys, like, you know, Arrieta won the Cy Young last year. Hendricks was in the discussion this year. So you have three, like, aces, basically.
And even Lackey has pitched deciding World Series games twice, you know, pitched a game seven in the World Series. You know, he's really... I forgot that the Cubs were like rolling with a 4-man rotation. Either way, because I only thought about it in terms of like a 3-man matchup for like the Indians because they only have a rotation of three. So it's like how does it match up with anyway? But like I was just saying, it's like if you have a 10-9 advantage with your ace. It doesn't matter that you have a 2-8 deficit in the next two because it's either way, it's 1-2 if you break it down that simply, which partially postseason is. Another thing is just like we've talked about, it's tournament baseball. It's a short series. Like, but it's not over, yo. Like the Cubs could win. Let's talk about game five, though. We were going through reviewing real quick.
Let me ask you one question before we move on to that. Do you think Theo Epstein is regretting not trading for Andrew Miller instead of Chapman right now?
I mean, yes. I think that anybody would want Miller over Chapman.
Yep.
Especially since he has a manager who is smart enough to use Miller in the way he's willing to be used, right?
Yeah.
Because clearly he put in Chapman in the seventh. I don't know if Chapman would be happy. I mean, it doesn't matter if he's happy about that or not, but what do you think?
I mean, it's just an interesting thing because Miller got traded, obviously, after Chapman.
Right.
The Yankees lost a couple of games in between there. The Cubs had enough prospects. So part of me is thinking, like, you know, the Cubs were preemptive and made that first move to get Chapman at the trade deadline. Like, they made the big first deal for a reliever. But if you almost think about it, if they had maybe waited, let another team made the first move, and then Epstein would be in the discussion to go get Miller because he would not have spent all those prospects on Chapman. And I think the Cubs could have outspent or they could have obviously outbid the Indians.
Well, what was a bigger package? Who did the Yankees got more for Chapman?
Miller.
No? Oh,
no,
Miller?
For Miller, because he has the extra year in his contract.
Oh, right. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forget. Chapman's a rental. Yeah.
If you remember, though, like, the Yankees had to be compensated because they would have gotten the compensation pick at the end of this year had they not traded him.
Chapman?
Yeah, Yankees. So, like, obviously teams had to meet or exceed that.
Right, right.
But Miller was still much more expensive.
Right, I forgot about that. I forget that he has an extra year. I was only thinking in terms of this year. I also did forget that they went and got Chapman first, and everybody was like, uh-oh, Theo's not waiting. He's setting the market for reliever prices.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe Miller cost more because of what he paid for Chapman. Maybe he raised the bar for Cleveland. But, it is funny to think about.
He may not have even been available, you know, like had the Yankees won a couple of games. Like,
yeah, I'm forgetting that you guys had some silly hope. No, I think that everybody wanted the Yankees were going to sell. But I understand what you're saying. I think I get it because Miller, the Yankees were in the spot where they were like, unless an offer blows us away, yeah, we're going to keep him for next year. He's exactly. too good of a deal. You need to blow us away. And obviously they got their first round pick, right? And the redhead kid and whoever
Clint
the other
Frazier.
Kid.
Yeah, that Cuban redhead.
That
Carrot Top.
That ginger. don't get too excited with Coles, but the Mets are interested in the Cuban.
Kicking the top. Yes.
But maybe this is in hindsight because, like, if you look at their careers, I'd rather have Chapman, right? But if you just look at, like, the last 3 years, Miller's been better than anybody.
Yeah.
But like, if you take out this year, then Betances has been better than any of them because he's pitched 80 innings. I don't know. But, like, obviously, given the postseason, anybody would rather have Miller. Both of those trades at the time, I'll say this again, I've said it, but I'm always like, damn, I don't understand. I forget that the postseason you can do this. I mean, this is the first time that managers in our era have pushed their relievers this much.
Yeah.
However, I do forget how much it matters and how much, like, you ask them to go a little further in the postseason. So, therefore, I'm like, why are these teams paying so much for these relievers? But they matter, like we talked about, literally, like Miller's case, going from 5% of his team's outs to 16% of his team's outs. That's so much more valuable.
Yeah, and especially with the way that the deadline and the wild card is set up where more teams are in contention, the market for starting pitching becomes so tight at the deadline. Teams that have great starting pitchers are not really trading them. We've seen that the last few years. So it kind of comes down to, right, am I going to put together this package of promising prospects for like a fourth starter or like a fifth starter at best who's probably not going to pitch in the postseason? Like, that's why we're seeing teams go and
or be willing to pay for your future, but you get the top end reliever.
Yeah.
I guess it's a similar theory to what we talk about just now with, like, very basic level, you beat the other team in this slot, right? It's like our reliever is better than their reliever. That's worth it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's worth a lot.
Yeah.
Versus, like, having the best reliever is worth quite a bit. Like, and Chapman hasn't been as good as Miller. So anyway, but game five, just the Cubs won 3-2. What were your thoughts on that game? I mean, the Indians, I know, were big underdogs again. They were like, what, +195 to win or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago was -210, so I'm assuming Cleveland was like +190.
180. Yeah, I got it at 195. I bet on both before the series. I bet on before game five, I bet on the Cubs to win the series at +320 before game five, and the Indians to win that night at +195.
Good decision.
I wonder what the series odds are now. You think it could be like I would guess before I'll look it up. What's your guess? Unless you know already.
Well, I don't know, but so tonight is Chicago -142. That's not that big. I would say that for the Cubs, it should be like, it'll probably only be like +250, but it probably should be closer to like +375.
Oh, you think so? To win because of game seven with Kluber?
Because Kluber is going to be favored, and even though Chicago's favored for game six, it's not by all that much. So
right,
it's two
right.
separate outcomes.
And you got to win two games. Right. I'm going to guess it's less than that, though. I'm going to guess because everybody's stupid logic is probably just like the Cubs are probably going to win tonight, and then you never know what happens in game seven. But you're right, it's two separate outcomes, one where you're a big underdog and one where you're a bigger than -140 underdog, right? And then one where you are, I'm going to say it's like +210, -240, like +210 Cubs, -240.
I wouldn't be shocked by that because I think the public is just going to be favored on the Cubs in this series no matter what. They're the flashier team, they're the bigger city. They have the bigger names, and, you know, even though everybody in the media is talking about bullpens and, like, putting the ball in play, and that's the key to winning postseason games, I think that that's not totally reflected in public sentiment. I think that a lot of the betting public still doesn't understand that.
Yeah. I'll try to find it later. I can't, my bookie site isn't letting me log in, but
damn it, Frankie.
I know. So, they were talking about on MLB Network that like Francona seemed to give, Bauer a longer leash while he started pitching bad in game five.
In game five, yep.
But I mean, maybe not that he would do this like by choice, but maybe part of him is just like, forget it. Like, yep. I'll just rest everybody. Like, I don't know. Even though he didn't have to use a lot. I don't know.
I'm with you. I think that another part of that as well is the movement on Bauer's pitches was phenomenal. And it actually, like, his curveball was really breaking. The problem was his location, which is always obviously the issue. But, you know, they have access to, like, the spin rate on these pitches, the velocity, like the exit velocity off the bats. And if you look at that particular scenario, it wasn't like, you know, there was the home run.
Then the double off the wall, yep, that Rizzo hit. This is in exactly the third inning. What are they down at this point? I think it's like 1-0.
I think that Bryant's home run tied it at 1-1.
It did.
And Rizzo crushed that double. But other than that, there wasn't really hard contact against Kluber. So you had like,
you mean
Russell
against Bauer?
Bauer, sorry.
I think he walked somebody. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, there was a walk. Russell hit an infield single. Baez bunted with runners on first and second with one out. And I think that he ended up, beating that out? Yeah, because then David Ross,
yes,
had a sacrifice fly. So there wasn't like a ton of hard contact. And, you know, you, of course, you have the capability of using Miller, like that great bullpen, but you don't want to be doing that every single time. And
right,
he's pitched 2 days in a row, a lot of innings. So, like, you know, there's two different objectives, right? The Cubs need to win one game 3 times in a row, whereas the Indians, they just need to maximize their chances of winning one game.
Right. Go on.
Right. And so when you think about that, like the Indians, you know, if you use Miller now in a situation where you're going to probably lose the lead anyway,
right,
Miller isn't guaranteed to save you,
right,
from this situation.
Yeah.
Let's let Miller get 2 days rest, and then we could throw him like 3 innings,
exactly,
in each of those games.
No, I agree. It totally makes sense when you think about it that way. Like obviously the philosophical thing of like, what are we going to give a half-ass chance to try to win one of these next three, or we're going to go all in on one or two? It, you know, that's a simplified verb. But you're right. Their goal is to win any of the one of them, and they could pick the one.
Yeah.
And also,
and
it's
Lester,
like they were
pitching
down.
Lester was pitching phenomenal,
pitching awesome, and they're down. The lead is already gone. They don't have a lead at that point. So it's much different when like you're in trouble with a lead, then you pull your guy. So I got those series odds. I was right. It's the Cubs are actually +210. And then my stupid bookie with his big vigs, it's -250 for the Indians. But that's like,
okay,
what I guessed, because I'm a degenerate or a genius. Either your pick. So now game six, Arrieta. So what do you think is going to happen? Like, what's your prediction for these next two games? You think chalk, that it goes Cubs-Indians?
Well, don't forget, we don't know that the Indians are going to be favored for Game 7.
Right.
Right. Like, just based off of what we saw.
Yeah, the Cubs are a better team overall, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, Kluber, again, has been the best pitcher, but that's not, like, a safe assumption to totally make.
I think
but
you're just trying to make yourself not seem as chalky as you are.
Well, I think that, I mean, I think the Indians are going to win tonight, so I'm not really.
Oh, all right. I stand corrected.
Yeah, I mean, that bullpen to me, you know, with that extra day's rest, you know, you have Miller for, I think, even up to 3 innings. You have Shaw and Allen, so that's almost 5. Like, I just like the way that you can basically construct a game from back to forward with the Indians, where, like, Tomlin really only has the pressure of, like, okay, go 3 to 4 innings and don't let up more than 2 runs.
You think that the Indians can hit Arrieta enough?
I mean,
I'm going to
peep out
his stats.
Arrieta hasn't necessarily been the same pitcher that he was last year.
Right, right. He's been inconsistent.
The Indians really, the Cubs have been a team that struck out a ton, but the Indians have just consistently like put the ball in play. So, again, like I just favor that style of play where you put it in, you know, you actually put the bat on the ball, things will happen. So, and I think there's no huge pressure for the Indians because of that bullpen. They know, like, all right, we only need like two or three runs. We're not
right.
We're never really out of a game because you can always just basically put a hold on what the other team is doing offensively.
You think that actually matters in your head when you're an offensive player?
I mean, I don't think it's the main part of what they're thinking about, but when you construct a game plan, it's like, all right, we don't need like a huge break for us to happen offensively.
Right.
Like we just need to produce to like an average level.
And you're right, Arrieta, his postseason this year, he's been only a 3.7 ERA in 16 innings. Wow, Madden's really gone with short outings. Like I'm forgetting that every starter he's pulling after a little bit. Like he's really only letting them go twice through the lineup.
And then he goes to like Carl Edwards or Mike Montgomery.
And then he lets them blow the game. Well,
Justin Grimm.
Okay, so here's the other thing to preview. I think a very interesting dynamic we didn't even get to yet is that before the series I thought, and so did you. You agreed with me that the Indians had a bigger advantage at home with their DH than they'd had a disadvantage on the road having to hit their pitcher. Or no, I'm mistaken. I would reverse it. We thought that they're were at more of a disadvantage on the road, not getting to use Napoli and Santana. But so we were totally wrong, though, because one, they put Santana in left field and used Napoli and Santana in two of the three games.
Right.
And we were wrong on the other end that they would have a DH advantage at home because Schwarber comes back.
Yeah.
And now I don't even know that they do. I mean, they probably don't. Schwarber's a better hitter than Carlos Santana, even though he's been great, Santana.
Definitely.
And then Rizzo, you know, not that he would be the odd man out, but like Rizzo to Napoli, it's like those two versus those two. It's Schwarber definitely is better. So it's funny how that was totally reverse of what we expected.
Yeah. I mean, nobody thought Schwarber. I mean, I just couldn't believe that he would perform up to the level he has. And it's a short sample size, but he's swinging the bat really well.
I'm shocked he came back.
He played one game, I think, in the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah, that's nuts. They said he did an abbreviated spring training. They said he was in the batting cage for like a trillion hours like the day before game one.
It was funny on Twitter, this video went viral of, you know, Braxton Miller, the guy who was the quarterback for Ohio State. There was a video of high school football where Kyle Schwarber was like the linebacker and he just gets like totally juked out by Braxton Miller and like falls over. And so Braxton Miller tweeted out like, "I made Kyle Schwarber play baseball instead of football."
That's funny. So, you know, and then just to that's good. But on the other side is that Santana being able to play him in left field helped win you those games, like the games you won. I don't even know. I'm going to see. Did he? I don't even know that he could play left field. Like,
I don't think he had really played there the entire year.
No, even in MLB The Show, that's what I'm trying to see. It's not showing me. But even in MLB The Show, he's listed as like catcher, third base, first base. There's no left field. So if they don't know about it, you know, it can't be real. Let's see. He played one game in 2012 at left field. That's it. That's literally it. And one other in the outfield in another four innings. So he totaled
great.
Eight innings. That's awesome that Terry Francona did that.
That's awesome. And it's, you know.
Wow.
I'm a big.
Eight innings in his career in the outfield.
No, that's
eight.
Crazy because sometimes I definitely do. I sometimes put an overemphasis on like the defensive value. I mean, this guy has played eight innings, but when you think about it, especially in like the small sample size of these series, it's like if you get ahead, then you could switch the guy out for defense.
Right, right. And that's like Terry Collins' move with Juan Lagares. Like, Terry Collins loved doing that. Like, putting in his best batting lineup with
get ahead and then
protect. Right, get ahead and then switch. Exactly. You're right. I mean, and unfortunately, that's what Hayward is in part for the Cubs. How about the reverse Bartman play, when he jumped up? They made some crazy plays, the Cubs, in the field when Hayward, like, climb the Bartman, but that fan wasn't ready for that. Like, that fan could have been the next Bartman. There was a dude there who fully was just going to catch the ball.
Yep.
That I mean, that's pretty scary.
He's
thought.
Very glad that he didn't do that.
Dude, doesn't that scare you that you could be at the game one day and be the Bartman?
Yeah, and especially with, like, baseball, I'm sure the playoff environment is much different, but, like, there are times at a baseball game where I'm just completely zoned out, and if the ball just all of a sudden is coming my way, like, I'm definitely going to try and catch it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Remember the game six, the Royals and the Blue Jays, there was a home run that Mike Moustakas hit, and the weirdest-looking Amish kid leaned over sort of Jeffrey Mayer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you remember that?
Yep.
And it was just so funny that the kid is like he had the face of a 10-year-old with the creepiest Amish beard. Anyway, his face.